Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. This is a show every week we deal with mental health issues, and we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So every week we deal with issues relating to mental health, since I'm a psychotherapist, and the approach that I take is much more holistic, which means finding a balance between body, mind, and spirit so that the work that one is doing is in balance and has a sense of completion to it. Since yesterday was World AIDS Day, and if you've listened to my show over the last couple of years, you know I've done a number of shows related to HIV and AIDS, and since yesterday was World AIDS Day, I really wanted to do something this week that would bring that message home a little bit more, a greater sense of consciousness. So we're really going to talk about how this epidemic has affected the mental health of the world. And I do have a guest from the Phoenix area, from Phoenix Shanti, who will be on in a few minutes. But a lot of people feel, as you read in the papers, that the situation with HIV and AIDS is very different than it was when I first got involved in the field. I'm 53 years old, and when HIV came out in terms of our awareness and consciousness, as a gay man, of course, I was quite terrified, because at the time in the early to mid-80s, everybody just thought this was just something gay men are dealing with, and so nobody else wanted to be bothered with it, from our federal government to state governments, local governments. And anybody that wasn't a gay man, you know, didn't have that immediacy to dealing with it, didn't have the terror and fear, because nobody really understood what this was about. So here we are in 2004. We know what HIV is about. We know a lot more about it than we did back then. We know that people can die from this, but with today's meds and with the type of education that's out there, few people, you know, can need to risk infection. We know how it's transmitted. People can make choices now as to whether to protect themselves or not, and how to. And people are living longer with this infection and even with full-blown AIDS because of the mental attitude that people are taught if they seek help, as well as the medications that are out there that, while sometimes being very toxic, can also turn things around for people and help them live a lot longer. Statistic-wise, there, of course, this week, if you've picked up any newspaper or seen the news anywhere, you know that this issue has been presented quite a bit. So in an article from the Gay and Lesbian Times out of San Diego called The Changing Face of AIDS, Where We Are and Where We're Heading by Tyler Hauer, he has some statistics here. And he says, while the CDC estimated that there were nearly 300,000 people living with HIV in the United States at the end of 2002, there were only 16,371 AIDS-related deaths in 2002. That's still a lot, but a lot less than there used to be. That's a lot of people dying, but it's also a lot fewer people dying than are living with the virus. And it's nothing like the mortality rates of the early years of the epidemic, which is what I just said. He also said, quoted some more statistics, that in 1998, because I believe that it's very important that even though those of us listening and participating in this radio show are here in the U.S., this is now and always has been a very global issue. In 1998, he states, UNAIDS, the United Nations AIDS Agency, estimated that there were at least 30 million people living with HIV worldwide, with 16,000 more people becoming infected every day. I'm going to say that again. worldwide at least 30 million people living with HIV, with 16,000 more people becoming infected every day. Even within the United States, according to the CDC's surveillance report, infection rates continue to grow in the heterosexual population, with 35% of new infections in 2002 the result of heterosexual sex. I'm going to say that again, because even though I'm concerned about the increase in the rates again in the gay community, it's very important that we don't gayify this thing again to the exclusion of reaching out for prevention and education and treatment for people who are heterosexual or bisexual. Even within the United States, according to the CDC surveillance report, infection rates continue to grow in the heterosexual population, with 35% of new infections in 2002 the result of heterosexual sex. So, at the same time, in 2002, men who have sex with men still accounted for 44% of all new infections. Now, with all of this information, it gives us a sense of the immensity of what's still going on with HIV. The things that we do know, while the numbers are increasing again within the gay population, the gay and bisexual, or men who have sex with men population, we also know that teens are greater risk. Women, if you listened to my show a few months ago, I did a two-week, two-part series about women and HIV and AIDS, and I had two women who were diagnosed with AIDS on the show that were so amazing. And the number of women becoming increasingly infected because in the U.S. because of heterosexual sex is growing also. Now, with all these statistics, it's very important, again, that, you know, as we're talking about tonight's show, that we're talking about the mental health needs of the world. And I'm going to introduce you now to my guest, who I really appreciate because she agreed to do this very much at the last minute, and it's the first time she's doing a radio interview like this. Mandy Rowley is a behavioral health therapist with Phoenix Shanti Group, and she is a certified counselor. And Mandy, I want to welcome you to the show, and again, thank you for jumping in on this at the last minute.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Okay. Well, you're here now. The first question I want to ask you is really about you.
Okay.
Anything else you want to say to introduce yourself? And being a we kind of bookend this epidemic. I started at the very beginning, and I'm still involved. And you're fairly new to working in the mental health field within this epidemic in the last couple of years. What motivated you to focus on HIV and AIDS in terms of your counseling career?
Well, back when I was doing my undergraduate work, I took a class specifically related to HIV and AIDS. It was like HIV and AIDS 101, and we learned about all different aspects of the disease, including the psychosocial aspects, and we had a guest speaker come in a couple of days during the course and talk to us about all of the different aspects that people living with AIDS go through. And one of the big things that he talked about was how much mental health affects physical health. The studies that have been done with cancer patients that have shown an increase in immunity, an increase in just overall well-being when there's an increase in mental health. And just hearing that, it just clicked with me, and I said, that's what I need to do. This is who I need to work with. I need to work with people who are sick physically, who also, of course, are dealing with mental. I mean, there's no person who's infected with HIV who's not undergoing some sort of mental stress.
Of course.
And so helping them to live more balanced lives in order to live a longer life and a more positive life.
That totally as compatible as you heard me talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
My focus is body, mind, and spirit, and
mm-hmm.
what you're talking about there is the body-mind connection.
Exactly.
And I'm glad to hear you say that because obviously I don't know you very well, and I'm very impressed and glad that Shanti has someone like you there. Now, to talk about Shanti for a minute, before we actually get into any of the questions,
mm-hmm.
You probably know that the word Shanti means inner peace.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And it's ancient Sanskrit, and I know the L.A. Shanti Foundation was founded back in 1983 and started dealing with this compassionate support, and it's one of the things I've always liked most about Shanti in relationship to a lot of the AIDS organizations.
Mm-hmm.
From the very beginning, they were dealing with people who were HIV positive, even back into the 80s, in a very compassionate way with a sense of hopefulness
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your experience with Shanti in Phoenix? Because I'm not that familiar, but I would assume it's the same philosophy.
Well, yeah, and Shanti actually started out as a hospice back in the 80s and of course had to change services because people are living with HIV, not dying with
right.
it or dying of it. And so we offer a very, very well-rounded set of services through the agency, and I think that we offer quite a bit to clients that most agencies don't provide. Most agencies provide a sprinkle here, a sprinkle there, but we're able to provide mental health services, housing services to people with HIV. We also have a structured outpatient group for chemical dependency, and everyone in the group right now is HIV positive. It's not a requirement, but that's the majority of our clientele. And we also offer wellness services such as acupuncture and massage, and so we try to attack all different areas of clients' life other than actual medical services.
Mm-hmm. So. And you work closely with the medical aspect of what they're doing, I would think, too.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
We have to. Yeah.
So before we end the show tonight, I want you to tell people how they can get in touch with Shanti, either for services as well as for support. But we're going to take a short break here.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Mandy Rowley about HIV and AIDS and mental health in the year 2003. So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic, we're dealing with World AIDS Day, which was yesterday, and how this epidemic has affected the mental health all over the world. My guest tonight is a behavioral health therapist with Phoenix Shanti named Mandy Rowley. Mandy, what I'd like to talk about right now is we've been dealing, obviously, for 20 years now with, you know, one-on-one, the mental health issues. I'm assuming that when you're dealing with people with HIV at Shanti, you're dealing with individuals, you may do relationship work, you may do some family work. What is your experience of how someone's news about HIV, in other words, their seroconversion, they've just become HIV status, how does this impact not just the individual, but maybe the family also?
Well, I think that the most prevalent issue that comes up, at least probably 90% of the time, is the intense feeling of loss, and that's loss of the simplicity of what life could have been like before, and loss of security in the future, even though rationally, they know people are living a lot longer with this illness. It's become more chronic rather than fatal by any means, but I think just the sense of loss of normalcy, perhaps, and fear too, fear of the unknown. Those are the basic things that come to mind when I first have met when I meet with someone who's first serial converted. Although it's very rare that we do. We get them after a while, after they've known for several years.
Mm-hmm. And part of the loss too, I've always found, is not just the simplicity of life, although that's totally part of it, is also the loss of the life they thought they were going to have.
Mm-hmm.
That image of where they'd be in 20 years, the image of where they'd be in 10 years, about, you know, what kind of family life they were going to have, what their career was going to look like, and all of a sudden, in a lot of their minds, that's been pulled out from under them, and that's no longer who they are.
Definitely. They hear, I'll never have a normal relationship. I'll never be able to have a family. All of my dreams are gone.
How do you approach something like that when somebody starts bringing that up? I mean, where do you go with that?
Well, I validate their feelings and their fears, because they're very, very, they're valid feelings, although they're not very... And although with time they will see that they can have everything that they've wanted, it just may be a little different than they expected. But definitely validating those fears, because trying to tell someone straight up, no, you will be able to have children, you will be able to, they don't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not possible in their minds, so. I deal with it, but we also look at, I'll share my experience that I've had with my other clients and tell them stories and let them hear about others. And I definitely try to right away get them involved in some sort of, community effort where they can meet people who have more time under their belt and see that they're living life okay.
Mm-hmm. How many, I know, again, if you heard my introduction, you know, a lot of people, when they still think about HIV and AIDS, they're still thinking about gay men and bisexual
mm-hmm.
men.
Mm-hmm.
What is the trend you're seeing at Shanti in terms of, you know, women and, you know, minority people in various minorities or teenagers coming in needing support because of their own HIV? Are you seeing a shift in that over the last mm-hmm. few years?
We still have a good deal of our population are men who have sex with men or maybe not identify as gay. Most
mm-hmm.
of them identify as gay or bisexual. Some don't, although that's how they were infected. We deal a lot with the IV drug using population.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that's very widespread, men, women, gay, straight, all different ethnicities. And the women we see, although we don't see them nearly as much as we see the men, just because a lot of times I don't think they seek out services, you know, they tend to be less willing to seek out help.
Why do you think that? I mean, even if you don't know for sure, what would be your guess on what some of the reasons why women would be more hesitant to seek out assistance like this?
I think it's, I don't really know. I think a lot of it has to do with they really can't believe that they are infected and the stigma attached to it. Of course, everyone suffers from the stigma in all forms in which it comes.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you're thinking there's a different level of denial that goes on with women, which I would tend to agree partially with, because again, this has been such a gay associated thing that a woman getting infected would go, this can't be, I'm not a gay man. That's sort of denial. And then the stigma, the discrimination, what do you find your clients dealing with around that, even in 2003, almost 2004? What kind of situations are you finding with your clients in terms of discrimination?
I think it's more, a lot of our clients have, I wouldn't say opportunities, but they have a lot of benefits offered to them just because they're HIV positive, you know, the disability type things. But the stigma is, it's social. It's more social than anything, and it's more just, it's not as prevalent, I believe, anymore, but I think the majority, I would have to say in the family, that's where a lot of it, especially the newly infected, and
it's the family where they're finding most of the stigma coming from. You know, mom and dad and siblings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much been my experience. Although, you know, there's stigma within the infected population. You know, there are those who are straight who are infected and are so afraid of being labeled gay, because they have this disease, and so they turn, whereas before they were infected, they may have been very tolerant. I think I see a tendency to be more intolerant or, I don't know. Not,
even within the HIV-infected community, there is that inter-group discrimination and judgment that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And it's not all the time, of course, but I do see it. It comes out of fear and just fear of what other people are going to think about them.
Right. Which, again, I know is what keeps a lot of... I think what you're saying, you know, men who don't have sex with men who get infected, I mean, I have one close friend who was infected by his ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only source, you know, and he didn't even know she had passed away years earlier. He hadn't seen her for quite a while, and, you know, he's been diagnosed for a number of years, and now all of a sudden, you know, this piece of information comes to him.
Right.
But, you know, it's like a very difficult thing, you know, because while it's not as prevalent, men can be infected by an infected woman.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not as easy a transmission, but the blood contact will transmit no matter which direction it's going in.
Definitely.
In terms of the discrimination, I know that in the paper recently, I don't know if you've read about it, is with Cirque du Soleil, where there was one of the acrobats who is HIV positive and was given a very clean bill of health, and yet Cirque du Soleil still let him go.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that was the reason. And so when these sort of things hit the headlines, I think it makes it more difficult for people to risk becoming public.
Oh, definitely. With Arizona being a right-to-work state, I mean, you know, we could get fired for being gay, and then you throw that on top of it, and it just becomes a very, disclosure becomes a very touchy and uncertain topic. You know, who do I disclose to? Who do I trust? And a lot of the people we're dealing with are dealing with issues of trust.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know who they can trust, especially women.
Especially women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely. I know we're gonna be taking a short break here very quickly. But when we come back from the break, I want to talk about the trust and disclosure issue and how it relates to the mental health issues that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna take a short break here. This is Stuart Altshuler, Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM. Stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altschul. I'm a licensed psychotherapist in Los Angeles, and tonight's topic has to do with World AIDS Day and how the HIV/AIDS epidemic has affected the mental health of literally the world. My guest tonight is with Phoenix Shanti. She's a behavioral health therapist named Mandy Rowley. Mandy, before we took the break, we started talking about, you mentioned the words disclosure and trust. Mm-hmm. And you and I know that, I mean, to me, that's the thrust of the title of my show, Tell the Truth Faster.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the whole premise is that the faster you become honest with yourself about something, the faster you speak it and tell the truth to another or to a higher power or to whatever, the less stress you're living with, the less fear you're living with, the less energy you're expending in rehearsing what will happen when you do speak your truth or whatever it is. And it's the same premise I found with people with HIV and AIDS, and I'm wondering what you find and how you and Shanti approach this in terms of how much better it is when people actually do tell somebody that they're HIV positive or have AIDS, and how keeping the secret impacts them mentally and emotionally and spiritually, and how sharing it with somebody impacts them mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
Well, I would agree with you 100% on what you said about, basically your underlying premise or theme of the film or of the radio show, and that is that truth. Well, truth will set you free, or whatever it is.
Right.
I believe that 100% with all of my being. I think that keeping something so intense to yourself, not sharing it with at least the important people in your life, takes so much energy and really, really very much affects your physical well-being, your mental, your spiritual, every part of you. It takes so much energy. I know from personal experience, keeping things from the people that I love, it wore me out. And we talk about this with our clients, we talk about the pros and cons of disclosing and how it's important to really pick who it is that you don't need to tell everyone that you're HIV positive, but who are the important people in your life and why is it important to tell them for yourself and not for them? You're telling them for yourself.
Right. Talk about that a little bit more. What do you mean by you're telling them for yourself and for your own benefit? You're not telling it for theirs.
Well, it all has to do with not keeping that weight on your shoulders. When you're around people when a client or a person who's living with HIV is around someone who doesn't know, a lot of times that's going through their minds, you know, the whole time is do I tell the person? How do I tell this person? And it's just so draining that, you know, when the person that you tell finally finds out, they're going to react in, you know, one of two ways or three ways or whatever. They're going to be accepting or they're not. And that is, that's them.
And the greatest fear is they not just only will not be accepting, they may abandon and be rejecting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And yes, that happens sometimes. And although I did mention that, you know, I do see a lot of stigma in the family, I think that it's a lot less now than it was in the beginning. And the families that are more, or the loved ones or the friends that are more unlikely to be accepting are those who have been an accepting of things in the past,
mm-hmm.
So it's not a really big surprise, you know, when you actually
point.
Think
yeah.
about it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I find that most of us, I don't care what our situation is, we're afraid of saying something to someone because in our minds we're going to cause them pain.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, we feel like, well, now they're upset. You know what? Just like you said earlier, people need to grieve this new information and the implications of it. Well, the loved ones need that same time to grieve it too.
Okay.
But since they love you, they have a right to know so that they can best be a support and loving support for you. And it's not your fault that they're in pain now. This is important information to share, and their pain is a natural part and healthy part of their process of accepting and coping with this.
Exactly. This is something that we toss around, you know, the clients, especially in our groups. You know, one person will say, well, I don't want to tell so-and-so because it's going to hurt them and I don't want to hurt them. And the others are like, well, what is it going to do when they find out from someone else and not you?
How hurt will they be then that you didn't trust them enough with the information?
Right, exactly.
And the flip side of that, and I say this a lot on the show, when we're avoiding saying something to someone and we're using the excuse that, well, I didn't want to upset them, most of the time it's really, I don't want to deal with the discomfort of the conflict or the confrontation. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's altruistic thing about, oh, I just didn't want to upset them, I didn't want to cause them pain, but really it was our own discomfort we were avoiding.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
People need to be honest about that.
Mm-hmm.
I told you before we went on the air that I saw John Walsh's talk show this morning,
mm-hmm.
and they did a very interesting show. They actually had this woman who did this documentary called The Gift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about what's called bug chasers and gift givers. Bug chasers meaning people who are deliberately and consciously trying to get infected with HIV,
mm-hmm.
for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And gift givers are considered those people that are out there consciously offering themselves as someone who can infect them. And people who are out there giving the gift even when it's unwanted because they know they're HIV positive and they're having unprotected sex with people, deliberately and consciously offering to infect them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very powerful show, as you can imagine, and shocked a lot of people that this was actually going on. But, you know, those of us who work in this field know that barebacking is just a part of it, which means having anal sex without a condom,
mm-hmm.
But this deliberate effort to get infected or to get someone infected, what are you finding with this in Phoenix and in your circle there?
Well, it's definitely there. I wish that it wasn't, but
yeah.
It is. And I've met different, well, I'm going to say guys here because that's been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's been men who have told me that they shared a needle with someone that they were pretty sure was positive, and where they, you know, they had, where in the past they've been very careful and about having protected sex. They just decided that you know, screw it. And a lot of times this is, well, every time that I've seen this, it's been directly connected to depression and hopelessness and it's the easy way out in their minds. They don't want to live anymore, so why not just get infected with this thing that's going to kill them,
mm-hmm.
and then find out after they're infected that they're not dead and that they're still living and going to be living with this thing for probably a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yeah. that's what I've seen.
Yeah, there was a professor from NYU on the show also named Perry Halkitis who made some really good points, and one is that, you know, we have two other epidemics in this country. One is a epidemic of problems with mental health, like depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is the epidemic of drug abuse. And both of these lead to people's risky behavioral things that will get them to seek the virus, mm-hmm. you know, that, like you said, the severe depression, like, what's the point? Why do I care? Type of thing. Or the self-esteem issues being what they are, that, you know, they don't have that much concern for themselves, where getting infected, the self-esteem problems being, you and I talked about this, that it means now that they belong to a group.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of a club.
Right.
They're not alone anymore.
Right. I had one guy tell me who came in who was not HIV positive, who was seeking housing. And although we provide behavioral health services to clients who are not HIV positive, who may be at risk or are affected by, we don't provide housing to anyone who is not positive, and he was seeking housing, and I was talking to him, and he made the comment of, well, I may as well just go out and get infected so that I can have a place to live. And mm-hmm. he said, no, please don't.
But that rationale is there when you're in pain and when you're needy. Mm-hmm. The rationale is, well, it'll get me what I want, and it'll get me what I need.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, it was interesting, too, because one of the people who they interviewed on John Walsh's show this morning, who is a gift giver, who's been offered up to $2,500 from people to infect him.
Oh, my God.
Him. And he's turned it down so far. But he said there was actually a woman who found out that her husband was having an affair and was so angry with him that she wanted to get infected so she could get even with him.
Oh, my God.
So the women have this issue dealing with it, too. We're going to take another short break, and then we'll come back for our last segment here. So stay tuned. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix.
That I heard of once in a lifetime.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. And tonight we've been talking about HIV and AIDS and the mental health issues related to this epidemic. And my guest tonight has been Mandy Rowley, a behavioral health therapist with Phoenix Shanti. And we have covered a lot of stuff in less than an hour, Mandy. Is there anything you feel is important at this point that I haven't asked you or we haven't covered that you really want to make sure gets across or reiterate something as we're getting to the end of the show?
Well, there's so much under the realm of HIV that, yeah, of course, there's stuff, but I think that we didn't really talk about the young people who are being infected, and then I think that what the point that I want to make, and of course I know that a lot of people are making this in regards to prevention, is that just because there are drugs out there that manage this doesn't mean that it is anything nearly remotely worth getting just because you don't want to use a condom or you don't know how to say no, or you don't want to not engage in risky behavior. And I think that so many of the young people out there nowadays don't realize that this is still very serious and will affect their lives immensely, especially being infected so young and losing all of those dreams, or thinking they've lost all those dreams because of this. And so... We didn't talk about the young people very much, but
and it's an extremely important thing. As I said at the very beginning of the show, the number of teenagers becoming infected is on the increase and has steadily been on the increase for many, many years now.
Mm-hmm.
And for that very point that you're making, it's like, you know, it's like people think that, well, you know, so I'll take some pills if I get infected, it's no big deal, but they don't take into account the side effects of the medications, the multitude of pills they have to take, what the pills do in the long run to their organs and other systems that they may not know about yet, and the whole thing that this means, making different plans in a lot of ways to what, you know, you thought life was going to be.
Right. Mm.
And I think, and you might find the same thing, that it's harder for a young person. In fact, with this 21-year-old on John Walsh this morning, even though he's a gay man, said that it's harder for him to date guys his own age because guys his own age, as soon as they hear HIV,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us that have been through this for years, I mean, it's like I'm 53 and I'm single and I date, and someone being HIV positive is not going to stop me from dating them or even making love to them.
Right.
Because I know what to do and what not to do,
right.
you know, in that sense. Whereas someone who's 20, 21 years old, once they hear it, it's beyond what they're willing to deal with, or they don't know how to deal with it.
Exactly.
So it does add a lot to it, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you work much with teenagers or early 20s in terms of your own practice there at Shanti?
We mostly deal with people who are 30 and above, although probably mid-20s. I have a client who is my age, and I think that's probably, which is young.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
Okay.
And so, any younger than that, definitely we've seen them, but not very often.
So if there was a teenager in Phoenix listening to the show, where would they call? Who would they call? Who would you recommend?
Oh, well, someone who's HIV positive or
yeah.
interested.
But someone who's interested in wanting more information or who is HIV positive or thinks that they might be,
mm-hmm.
Who would you recommend that they call to feel more like it's an age group friendly place?
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely they can contact us, although as far as support goes, if they want to get involved with people who are their own age, there are support groups out there for younger guys, and I believe it's through AIDS Project Arizona. If not, it's through Phoenix Body Positive. Those are the two other large agencies in the valley who have support groups and other services targeted to people who have HIV. So,
Or they could get in touch with you to get the referrals too,
definitely,
correct?
Definitely.
How would they get in touch with you at Phoenix Shanti? What's the phone number there?
Our telephone number is 602-279-0008.
And is there a website?
Yes.
You know what it is?
I'm gonna guess.
Okay.
It's www.phoenixshantiaz.org. PhoenixShantiAZ.org, I believe. If it's not, it's just ShantiAZ.org.
Okay, and if not, they could always do a search and find it.
Yeah, I should have looked up.
And I'll tell the listeners also, if you have difficulty finding that way, you can always get this information off my website, TellTheTruthFaster.com. Which within the next few days that information will be up there, and there'll be a hyperlink over to Phoenix Shanti's website.
Mm-hmm.
And in a few weeks, I'm hoping this very show, if you want someone to listen to it that wasn't listening tonight or you want to hear it again, I archive all the shows that I've done in the past 2 years on KXAM as well as in other stations so that you can listen to any of the topics I've done and get the information and know who to contact. So those that are listening can still get to Mandy Rowley and other people at Phoenix Shanti via my website. So in case that's not the correct one, Mandy, we'll have the right one up there
all
soon.
Right. Good. There is one, Stuart, there is one other thing that I just remembered that I forgot to mention,
mm-hmm.
and that is we are dealing with a lot of clients who have been out of work because of medical things or whatever and who are wanting to get back into the workplace. So we've also developed a vocational rehab program that they get involved in. And we have two secondhand furniture stores that our clients work at. And and other people who just want vocational rehab, but a lot of times it's our clients, and so it's a really wonderful mm-hmm. opportunity.
And to support Shanti also, I'm going to put a little promo out there, which is if you're looking to do some volunteer work, they're always in need of people to help in so many different ways. If you're looking to make a financial donation, it's a nonprofit organization and well worth supporting. And like I said, I've been involved with Shanti here in L.A. since 1986 at various times in various ways and stuff as a volunteer and as a therapist, as a volunteer therapist and trainer. And I know that Shanti does excellent work and has an excellent attitude about what they're doing and why they're doing it. And I definitely want to thank you, Mandy, for being on the show, especially on such short notice. And I'm so glad that this is your first one and you did a great job.
Thank you, Stuart.
Okay, so thank you all for listening tonight. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. I'll be on next week at the same time. And again, if you want more information or want to get in touch with me, tellthetruthfaster.com, and be glad to get your emails. Have a good night.
That I heard of once in a night.